Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 313 show. Today is exciting because we are zooming from across the world and we are speaking with someone who not only built but runs something called the Unicorn Mothership. That is right. Now, before we dive into talking about unicorns and the 313 for the next hour, we have a little bit of housekeeping. So check this out.
KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
All right, and we are back as in we are actually here. So welcome to the 313 show. We're going to be talking today with the founder and the person who is famous for building the Unicorn Starship. And I really don't know what that means, but that's exciting to me. I like all things when it comes to unicorn and mythical creatures. So today we're going to have a lot of fun. Don't know about the 313 ship, I guess, the starship that is the 313. It's a method that I've created, which is a lot of fun because it's a thought experiment that breaks down what is complex and it ends up trying to simplify things. Like Einstein said, let's get them as simple as we can, but not simpler. So we're gonna dance on that fine line. I'm excited to get to know you a little bit before we dive into it. First, I want to know the backstory on how we came here today, how we are talking from across the world. So how did you initially find me? How did the 313 get on your radar? And what initially kind of struck you about it?
So I have this habit of reaching out to at least five people who could be interesting to talk to, who are also in business and who could inspire me somehow to, I don't know, collaborate together on something or just learn something from each other. So you were one of the people I found on Twitter, and I usually have like the same search keywords that I use. I don't remember which one I used.
That's fine.
To find you. But so I stumbled upon your profile and I saw the 313 method was mentioned in your profile. I didn't know what that was, but I was like, whatever, I'll just reach out, send you a message and just ask, you know, and quickly introduce myself. And I always ask people to jump on a call because I feel like that's so much more personal, especially in a world where, you know, everything happens through email and there's a lot of stuff going on online. It's just so much cooler to be able to video chat or just have a phone call with somebody and just, you know, talk like the old fashioned way. So
yeah, the actual skill and talent and experience of talking with people, H to H, right? Human to human.
Yes.
And exactly. you gave a call, you booked something on my calendar and I was like, where's this number coming from? And it was from another country. I'm like, okay, hi. And you had scheduled an appointment, but I wasn't in front of my computer before I saw that. And I was like, I'm sort of doing cartwheels right now. How about we talk about this live on the radio? And then there's this nice long pause. And then you're like, well, that sounds fun.
Yeah,
so here we are.
Nobody has ever like done that as far as I know. I mean, I also offer free discovery calls to my clients.
Yeah.
Or potential clients, but I really like the idea of doing radio because I'm in radio and I just thought, you know, this is so much
perfect.
More aligned with what I do myself. So yeah, really cool.
Nice. So let's jump onto the Unicorn Mothership and we'll cruise. But the trick is I don't really want to know much about that first because I want to know about you.
Right.
And whenever I meet somebody, it's a bit odd, but I stop them from telling me about themselves and I ask them to tell a story from their past because I really feel like who we are is a summation of all the stories. And if you really kind of deconstruct some of the more memorable stories or some of the things that, you know, were really impactful for you in your life, it seems to be this thread that I can stitch together and be like, okay, I so know who you are as opposed to just like reading your LinkedIn bio or something.
Right. So,
is there a story from your past, could be childhood, could be adolescence, it could be yesterday, something that you think really represents who you are as a person if that was the only thing I had, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you got to meet the mother of the mother.
Wait,
the mother of the mothership. Wait, no, the mother of the unicorn mothership. It'll be like, who is she? I'll be like, oh my gosh, this one time she.
Yeah, what would that be? Well, actually, I'm going to go to a story that happened yesterday.
Okay.
So I went to a concert in France. So I live in Belgium, but I went to a concert in France, in the north of France, which is not far from me, about an hour's drive, by Mike Skinner in the Streets. I've always been a huge fan ever since I was, I don't know, like 18, ever since I heard the first album. So when these tickets became available, I just had to go because I had never seen him live, and he's just such a huge hero for me. But these tickets were booked like months ago, and I totally forgot about it. So I was spending the day with my mom and my brother, and then all of a sudden my friend calls me like, hey, we're going to the Streets tonight. And I was like, I totally forgot. So, I just turned my day around and jumped on the train, and an hour later I was in France. My friends picked me up, we had a beer, a little chat, whatever. Very nice venue, had never been there before. So me being in music, it's interesting to see that. And then the concert starts, and Mike Skinner, as usual, is like, he didn't disappoint. He was really funny. But then, and this is the point of the story, he challenged a couple of girls in the public to crowd surf. And I had never done that before.
Okay.
And I was like, well, this is interesting. Like, how does one crowd surf? Because I was all the way in the back of the room. I wasn't even in front.
Yeah.
So my friend goes like, give me your bag, give me your beer. Just do it. Like, just do it. And I was like, this like split second of thinking, I don't know. Like, whatever, I'll just do it. So she just kind of taps this guy that was standing in front of me on the shoulder. Like, hey, she wants to crowd surf, like pick her up. And so they picked me up, but the band was already going into the next show and the crowd surfing had long passed. So I was just standing there in the air. And then they
dropped the floor,
like 4 meters in. So I had like bruises on my elbows.
Oh my gosh.
They picked me back up. And then all of a sudden the band notices like, hey, there's this girl coming from the back, all the way to the front. And then they just dropped me in front of the stage. And Mike Skinner of the Streets himself said, oh no, I can't talk to you. Like, you're too beautiful. You look like somebody I could fall in love with. And I was like, no, but I just want to have a chat. Like, really? This is something I've wanted to do, like, forever. And then they just escorted me out. And then I was wet, like, in Coca-Cola and beer. And super happy. Like, I can't believe I just did that,
Wow.
So just seizing the moment, basically, and just doing it. Like, whatever. I'm not going to think about it. I'll just do it. I want to. And I'll just crowd surf for the first time in my life at 34.
Wow, anyway. That is rocking. So that really, there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, I know you're family oriented. You still love your mom and your sister, and that's important. And you travel distances to do that. At the same time, you not only plan ahead, saying this person's coming to town, but you're also like forgetful, like I am, and you're like, wait, what? But still able to sort of on the dime flip around. And I love the fact that it was your first time surfing, and you did fall, which always happens in the real surf and the crowd surfing. But not only did you get dropped, but then you decided to get back up and you made it to the stage to see somebody you'd always wanted to meet. And that's like, there's perseverance and there's all kinds of stuff. And the fact that you're in this music industry, it's got to be kind of an iconic moment for you.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm definitely not going to forget about this because, I mean, everything was like, I was listening to it and like, I know all the songs and the band was there. And I was also listening to everything like on a technical level, like, is this right? Like, does this sound right? Just everything was, really good. It's one of the best gigs I've seen in years, And then, for that to happen was mind blown. Yeah.
Yeah.
I instantly texted all of my friends. Oh my God, Mike Skinner told me blah, blah, blah. I crowd surfed, It's over the moon. It's really funny.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I definitely know who you are now based on that story. Like, next time you're in town, you need somebody to join you at a rock concert, let me go. I was more of a mosh pitter than I was a crowd surfer, but I definitely would support however I could to throw things up there.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now, what type of music, if you're in the music industry, I would assume that maybe you have some strong opinions about music. What are your genres? Not your favorite type, but I guess what are some of the bands that you like and that really kind of move you aside from the Streets?
Right. That really is an answer that goes to many genres. I do have preferences, of course. I like anything that has a hard, heavy bass line, and that you can really feel, like, physically in your body.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the things I really like right now are a lot of stuff coming from the UK and the electronic scene. A lot of independent labels over there that I'm following that I like. Like Ninja Tune, for example, is one of the biggest. Really love them. And then in terms of bands, I have a band here in Belgium that I really like. It's a metal band. They're called Amon Ra. They've been friends of mine since I was 17, and I've kind of watched them grow and evolve into, you know, their genre. So
yeah.
Really too. So really anything that feels like I have a personal connection to and that really I can feel in my body, like you can be completely immersed into the sound. That's what I really like.
Okay. So you're in luck because the 313 is a method that will help you get your message to resonate so people actually feel it in their body. And it's an interesting analogy to try to make, because if you think about it, you know, the words that you choose to use are just like lyrics in a song. You don't necessarily have a backdrop or a backbeat, but everything from the way that you're dressed to your stage presence, to your body language, to, you know, the rhythm at which you speak, whether it's really fast or even really slow, all those things impact people who are in the audience. And there might be somebody who's your ideal target client who's in the back of the room, and you could inspire them by your voice, essentially. And I think a lot of times, let's take music for an example. I mean, I've got hundreds of thousands of songs all around lining everywhere here.
Yeah.
You would just love this place, by the way. It's just like everything. Yeah.
Looks but awesome.
I don't have time to listen to all this. I'm not going to listen to all this. I will probably go at the end of the show. I'll go and I'll be like, boop, boop, boop. You'll tell me where to stop. We'll pull one off the wall and maybe that'll be what we actually play. But I look at all of these CDs and all these tracks and all these artists almost as a representation of like people, right? And at the same time, there are people who are not artists, but they're passionate, they're entrepreneurs, they're executives, and they have their own tracks that they feel like should be listened to, but it's just a CD on somebody else's wall that they don't care about. And I think that trying to get your message and decide on your band and decide on your music and decide on your lyrics and deciding how to capture the audience's emotions, feelings, and bodies. It's not just people listening. It's getting them involved into the song. Like, you knew the words to the song, and so you're singing, and it's not just, you're not just silently listening. So I really like this analogy of music and communication when it comes to explaining, you know, what you do. If you had to say on a scale of 1 to 10, your comfort level now, as far as clearly communicating what you do in a way that makes people sort of feel it, where do you think you are now from your confidence or your ability to do that on a scale of 1 to 10, just so I have a gauge?
7.
Okay, cool. So we're going to work through the 313 process, and it essentially is going to help. The deliverables will be at the end of the show. You'll have the ability to explain what you do in 3 sentences, in 1 sentence, and then 3 words. And this is really the cornerstone to a whole branding process behind it, which I think you'll be interested in. You know, I call it the 4V formula, and it's vision, voice, volume, validation. And I find that a lot of people, when they're trying to brand themselves or their company, they're doing the right things, but in the wrong order. And that'll get you in the wrong spot. So it's all about starting. So think of this as a starting point to use as like a guide. Based on that, we'll sort of work through it. And it'll be almost kind of like a game show. I'll bring you through it. There'll hopefully be some discoveries, but it's very much a positive thing. When you get something wrong, it's not about getting it wrong. It's just, you know, there might be a different way to look at it. So here we go. I need to set a premise, and I kind of said it before, like, I'm going to tell you that I don't care about any of this music behind me. I don't care about the music out there, and I'll take it further. I don't care about the artist. I don't care about the musician. I don't care about the drummer. I don't care about you and what you do. I don't care about, like, I have no reason to care, right? So the whole thing is based on, I don't want it to come across aggressive or pejorative, but the fact of the matter is there's too much music for me to listen to care about it all.
Yeah.
And I believe that people are more interested in the problems that the music solves, or the problem that you solve, or the problem that your company solves. Because as soon as you think about, whoa, this company could really solve one of my problems, this person could solve my problem, that's where I'm interested. I'm willing to put in the CD and I'm willing to play it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I'm going to like it, but I might be more willing to. And so the premise is that you have to assume that nobody cares what you do. And that's kind of a tough thing for people to stomach, because they're like, but that's my identity. That's what I do. We're going to get there. I'll show you how to incorporate it. But the goal here is to get people to feel what you're saying and get them interested to want to crowd surf to your band. So the first section is really the three part. How do we get your message into three sentences? So the first is going to be clearly identifying the problem that you solve. Because if you agree, nobody cares what you do, but they care about the problem that you solve, it's inherently necessary. Can you describe the problem that you solve in one sentence? And I'm going to let you know that you will want to tell me what you do, but don't tell me what you do. Okay. Tell me just the problem that you solve without any trace of what you do. And if you start to tell me what you do, I'm going to go, burr, and we'll start again.
Okay. Right.
So what is the problem that you solve in one sentence? Go.
Okay. I get to help DJs and producers. Shit, yeah, I saw what I did. Okay.
So wait. What just real quick, what is it that you just did?
Yeah. I think I already defined my target group and already said what it was.
The words that you use, you said I help.
Yeah.
So when you say I help, that's what you do. But I don't care what you do. It's like I was trying to warn you because I want you to. So if you say I help people, like all of a sudden that's a CD on the wall that I don't care about.
Right.
So what is the problem that the people have that you help? Like maybe you can say the biggest problem that musicians have, or maybe you can say the most terrifying thing for musicians, or musicians go out of business because of blank. Yeah. Do you see the difference there?
Yeah. Then I would say balance music and life.
Okay. So if you just said balance and music and life, I don't understand what that is. Okay. Here's actually another point. Our brain listens for keywords. And if I pulled the CD and the front of it said balance in life, I'd be like, I don't get it. There's no reference.
Yeah.
So part of making an effective single problem statement is going to be using the word problem. It just triggers. Right. So the problem is that what musicians have a hard time balancing or something. So using those keywords in this problem sentence somewhere, identify that it's a problem. And I'm going to go, oh, what she's talking about, that's the problem.
Right.
So try one more time.
So the problem is that DJs and producers have difficulties balancing their music and their life.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Now I'm gonna agree that that's a problem, right? But I'm gonna ask you the way that you described it, that it's difficult to have the balance, on a pain level of 1 to 10, how painful is it the way that you said it? If somebody else were like, if you heard somebody say that, and I asked you, how painful was that sentence on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'd probably say a 5 or a 6.
Okay, yeah. I would too. Now, why would you say a 5 or a 6? I know you're judging yourself right here, but this is kind of right?
I know where you're going. I think because there is not really like a pain word in there. It's okay. Balance, and balance sounds positive and not painful.
So you're right on point with that. And the challenge is that you can still describe what you do in terms of the problem that you solve, and people can still be like, meh.
Yeah.
And the reason is because when something is less painful, there's not much for me to do. Like, okay, so what? Like, yeah, it's hard. Life's hard. It's a balance. Okay, man, I can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you start to describe it in a way that actually has some real pain with it, then my natural inclination is to think that I want to help, or like there should be something that we should do about this.
Right.
I talk oftentimes about the difference between a paper cut and a finger being chopped off.
Yeah.
If I got a paper cut and I'm like, help me out, you'd be like, there's nothing for me to do. Like, it's a paper cut.
Yeah.
But if I got my finger chopped off and it's mm-hmm. and it's blood squirting everything, like maybe at least you can call 911, or like if we were in the same room, mm-hmm. you would go to action. You would know what to do.
Right. Yeah.
So if we're going to describe what we do in terms of the problem that we solve, there's value in making it so that when someone hears it, they actually have this inclination, like, we need to do something about this.
Right.
So how can we tweak that a little bit?
I was thinking the first word that pops to mind is anxiety.
Okay.
Because a lot of DJs and producers have, you know, anxiety about their music, as in, it's not going to be good enough, I don't have enough time.
So is that a confidence thing too? Or is it not as much confidence, it's worrying whether or not it will be picked up? Like, I'm just trying to dig into.
Yeah, I would say it's more worrying that it won't be good enough, it won't be picked up, it won't be, you know, it won't connect them to, you know, their public or their fans or to labels or, you know, to become
successful. So what does that lead to? Is it ultimately that they're going to fail? Ultimately that they're going to spend too much money? Ultimately that they're going to have to go back and live at mom and dad's house? Like, what is the result of that then?
Yeah, I think the failure is a big factor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all that for maybe it's along the lines of the biggest problem that, you know, musicians have, or maybe electronic DJs have, mm-hmm. is that if they're anxious and worried about how their music will resonate, that is the one reason why they will fail.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm like, I don't know, but do you see how we're really dissecting it to make it so that it resonates with an actual pain and some blood?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let me show you a practical application of how you can utilize this concept when you are on stage, essentially, when you're talking with somebody. I'm assuming people ask you what you do, right? You meet somebody, they're like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Instead of telling them what you do, you now have an opportunity to say, I know this sounds funny, but it's not really what I do that's important.
Yeah.
It's the problem that I solve. That's what's important.
Right.
And what's going to happen is that they're going to go, then they're going to ask you, what is the problem that you solve?
Yeah. Okay?
So remember, they don't have any idea what you do at this point. Okay. Now then you go, you know, the problem is that, you know, musicians who can't get past their own anxiety and self-doubt don't realize that that's the one thing holding them back from ultimate success, or that's the one thing that will make them fail.
Right.
Okay. And then see how you're nodding your head, like that resonates. So the person listening would be like, the person would sit there and be like, yeah, that's, I get it. That's a big problem. Then you could say, I have a question for you. Is this a problem that you have just by chance? And they would say, yeah, I do. Uh-huh. Okay. Is this something that as a musician, is this something that you're looking to solve sometime in the near future? And they go, yeah. And you go, that's cool. I can help you out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You haven't even told them what you do. They have no idea what you do, but they're interested if they resonate with that problem. Now, I'm kind of assuming that you're maybe at a place where there's a bunch of musicians, right? Not everybody's a musician, but if you meet somebody and you go through that same process and they're like, no, I don't have that problem. Then you're like, cool. Do you know any musicians? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you've stopped like pitching them. And now they're going to be willing to sort of help you find other people that they know that have that problem.
Yeah.
But they still don't even know what you do, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah, insane.
So the next thing that they're going to ask you is, so what do you do? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because that's the initial question, but now you're at a point where they're actually bought into you and they actually want to listen to you. Where typically people will be like, you know, what do? And they're not really listening. They're just waiting for you to finish so that they can ask the same question. And, you know, it's just sort of a, it's sort of fake sometimes.
Yeah.
For this first three sentences, you now have the problem sentence, and you can do some work on it. And you can have a couple of versions of it. Maybe even talk to your clients and say, what is the biggest problem that I solve for you? It might be something a little bit different, but it's on the same lines.
Yeah.
Now you have your problem in one sentence. Now, what is your solution? This is like, this is what you normally should be able to say. So if I said, okay, now what do you do? Can you describe or tell me what you do in just one sentence?
Okay. I help DJs and producers build confidence and resilience so that they can make conscious choices for their lives and their careers.
Okay. I like it. Now my question is, does that solution solve the problem that you stated?
Well, to me, yeah, but
it does. It really does. That's good, because a lot of times I'll ask people for the solution after I ask for the problem, and there's a disconnect. What's key about the solution is that you're describing something that solves the problem. So there's a connectivity there, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it may seem obvious to you, but to the person who's listening, it's connecting the dots. It's letting them feel and process that information. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The mistake that a lot of people make is that instead of answering what they do, they will answer how they do what they do. It's a totally different question.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure you've met people that they just ramble on and on and on and on.
Well, yeah, I've done that in the past. I mean,
What you end up doing is explaining how the process works. But people didn't ask you how it works. They just asked you what you do.
Yeah.
So if you just tell them what you do and then you stop, you finish the sentence, and then you wait in silence, if they're interested, they're going to ask you, how does that work?
Okay. Yeah.
Now you've brought them one step closer. And before telling them how you do what you do, you can say, tell me what you know about music and musicians and that struggle. Tell me. And then they'll tell you and you'll say, that's all totally spot on.
Yeah.
Now here's what I do. Here's how I do what I do. It's a little bit different. Or here's my magic sauce. Or, you know, I am the unicorn mothership and here's how we do things differently. We're crazy. Yeah. Let's get into the weeds, right?
Right.
So now technically you have one sentence, which is your problem statement, one sentence, which is your solution, and they connect.
Okay.
So the third sentence is going to be your target market. Okay. So tell me your target market without using the E word or the A word, anyone or everyone.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Because oftentimes I'll ask people, who's your clients? And they'll say, well, all electronic DJs or everybody you don't want to do that. So what would be, what's your target market? Can you say it one sentence?
That would be DJs and producers who already have at least 1 year of a solid full-time career behind them in electronic music, preferably in the dance scene or the nightclub scene.
Okay. Any specific?
Location?
Do you meet with them in person? Or is this something that you do virtually?
I do it virtually and in person. When I'm talking about in person, I prefer to focus on the UK scene. Yeah.
Okay. So what I like about what you're doing is you are being specific. You're saying they've got a year under their belt. If they're in the UK area, that's even better. You could even characterize a bit more to tie in with the problem, because this target market, they're not only a year into the business, they're not only in a certain type of electronic music, but they're also facing these struggles, or they have bouts of anxiety, or they're scared to let people know that they're scared.
Yeah.
Things like
that. Right.
So the more specific you can communicate what your target is, the better. And people really get that mixed up. They think if I say that I'm good for all the DJs, then it makes me look better because I'm helping more people. But in fact, it's not. And it doesn't help me. If you said I help all electronic DJs, I'd be like, okay, great. There's nobody I can introduce you to. That's just too many.
Yeah. And honestly, I still feel like like on a weekly basis that my target audience is still not narrow enough. Like I still go back and forth with, should I focus only on women or like within that, you know? So I'm constantly thinking about that. Like I still haven't really decided yet, to be honest.
So you don't have to give too much information, but what do your clients look like now? What are those ideal clients that you have found that you've actually worked with? What do they look like?
Yeah. So most of them are like between 25 and 35, in a relationship or married but in a relationship, represented by management, at least 1 year under their belt in a full-time career, meaning making money with it, living off it, not having a side hustle, you know, just fully music professionally.
Yeah.
Male, UK, most of them, ideal clients, and very motivated and open to do self-work. That's also very important because they really have to be motivated. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then, basically looking for ways to get more in tune with their emotions, not really understanding their emotions, also not anxiety issues and failure issues, not understanding that and really wanting to get that.
What I'm hearing is you do have this vision, a very clear vision of them. So is the challenge that when you are messaging that or you're communicating it outside to the world, do you tend to go more general as a default?
Because
as I think, like if you and I were to sit in a conversation, granted this is publicly being broadcast, but let's say it's just you and me, and I really kept asking you, who are these people? What do they look like? What do they feel like? What kind of platforms are they going to be on? You've got all the answers there. But what do you think is it that is stopping you from going out there and saying, these are the only people that I really serve the best? What is the fear that's holding you back from that?
I think probably because I'm a woman and they're men. And I feel like identity-wise, it sometimes in my head, it feels like I can't truly understand their problems because I am not them. However, I always end up with people in that target group. And there are so many other things that totally resonate, which is why I'm also really able to help them. And those are like the coolest clients I have.
Right.
It's like a mindset thing somehow, like that I should be servicing women, but because I'm a woman, I know it sounds like really.
No. This is all very, 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 a lot of people struggle with this exact same thing. And have you had any female clients so far?
Just one.
Okay. How did that go?
It went really well, actually. Okay. Yeah. Like super amazing. Yeah. It was just a different process though.
Yeah. So yeah, I think you do realize it's a different process. And just hearing what you're saying about the female and male relationship, you know, you are targeting people who are already in relationships and you might be able to bring something out of that male, or you might be able to bring something, you know, like bringing your relationship to a level where you're able to connect on a different level. Because it sounds like you're saying, I'm not really sure if I can connect, but maybe the way that you're connecting is that you are not a male and you have a different perspective and you're helping these men.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Because
tap into their emotions.
Yeah, because I'm telling you. One of the clients I had was actually referred to me by his wife and then the other one by his sister. So there was always kind of a female link somehow.
Okay.
Interesting.
So think about this for a second, because you might have a really interesting niche to where you are helping these men deal with the emotional issues, come over these anxieties, and they might feel more comfortable opening up with you in that respect. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, women might not be levitating towards you because maybe there's a threateningness, or maybe because I know sometimes it's hard for ladies to really connect. So think about this for a second. Think about adding into your target audience the spouses of successful DJs, because really, if if the DJ himself is anxious and stressed out and whatnot, that's going to carry in his relationship. And yeah. if you can help to identify who those people are that they're with and make a connection and then say, this is how I help people. I help build their music career in a way that translates to balance at home. If you think about most decisions that are made in a marriage, it takes two people.
Yeah.
And so you might have a very interesting ability to be supportive of women in relationships with men who are professional DJs.
That's actually really interesting because I have, you know, my boyfriend is a DJ and a producer, and we have a certain process because we also work together. Like, we help each other out in our projects, you know, I with his music career and vice versa. And that's really interesting because I do speak to my clients about that as well. Like, oh, you know, here's how my boyfriend and I do this, or how we solve so-and-so, or, you know, how we work on this project together. So yeah, it's actually quite interesting. I never thought of that before.
Nice. Yeah. And so, so this is an example of something that's flushed out by a simple question. What's your target market? And digging down to actually say, like, no, like, really, what is it? And why is it? I look at your clients, because now you could probably find, like, typically if somebody is a full-time DJ mm-hmm. and they're traveling the world, does their wife typically travel with them and work with them? Or do you see that they're totally separate?
Usually it's separate, unless maybe the spouse or the partner or whatever is very much involved in the career as well, in terms of maybe management or something, but I haven't seen that really.
Okay. So I think there's a huge opportunity there for you, because if you're targeting the spouses of your target market, there's a really interesting way, and you can have that female connection. You can support women at the same time. You can have all that stuff, but you're supporting them by supporting a happy household. And mm-hmm. it's really the stressors on the house and the relationship that you're also helping to fix, which might be, you might have a DJ that's not as worried about their music, but, like, because they're successful with their music, it's stressing them out at home.
Yeah, true.
So something to think about, right?
Yeah, I have conversations going in my mind now. I'm like, oh, this client said this, and it totally relates to that. And, like, yeah, it's, yeah.
Okay, so we've teased that out. So now you have essentially your business in three sentences, right? You have the problem. The problem mm-hmm. is that due to anxiety and stresses of the business itself, it will create imbalance, and it will create, loss of income, and it'll, like, all these things that are tangible and bloody, you can tease them out. Mm-hmm. And your solution is exactly what you do to solve that problem. You know, it's a coaching, it's a hands-on, it's very top level. And then your market are DJs who have all those qualifications, but now it might also creatively include the unit, the couple.
Yeah.
Because that was already part of your target. And what's actually interesting, you might be able to add some of your solution to the wife, because she mm-hmm. might not have the right expectations, or she might not understand, or they might be on different pages. So you can not only help the musician, but you help the wife. You're like, I know I'm in a relationship with that. And that could be part of, there could be a counseling room, a counseling room in the mothership.
mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Yeah, totally makes sense.
Okay. So there's your three sentences. Now the fun part is getting it down to one sentence.
Oh, dear Lord.
Okay. Are you any good at math?
No.
Okay. So for those listening, they're definitely going to be like, wow, she's lying. But if they see this, they'll understand. So let's say that we have three items. We have a CD, we have a pen, and we have my cell phone. Okay.
Right.
How many different times can we rearrange these? So here's one way. Here's another way. Here's another way, right? Okay, right. So mathematically, it's 3 factorial. So what do you think the answer is?
6.
6. See, you've got to give yourself credit. You are so much. Here's the thing, side lesson for everybody. The thoughts that you choose will dictate the words that you use. So even though you said you weren't good at math, you were setting yourself up for failure. So instead, you could say, math is something that I'm trying to figure out, okay?
And I really hated it, but anyway, yeah. I'm getting it, yeah.
Okay, so items 6 different ways. And the trick is that we have the problem, we have the solution, and we have the market. Those are three things.
Right.
So now, based on mathematics, we can actually switch them around in six different ways. And if you truly have identified the single biggest problem, and you've identified your what solution, very top level, and you've identified your target market, you can now squish them all into one sentence. I solve this problem for these people, and here's how I do it. Or here's what I do for these people to solve this problem.
Mm.
And so it's less of an elevator pitch. It's more of like a fluid ability to describe problem, solution, and market six different ways.
Right.
For electronic DJs who are struggling and their anxiety might be holding them back, I have a proven coaching system that helps them not only grow their business, but whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
So you see how you can flip all those around?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's actually as a result of doing the work on the first three, now you can say what you do in one sentence. That can be used in a bio. It can be used if you're introducing yourself in a crowd and you don't have any interaction, things like that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. That's so helpful. You said bio and I was like, oh, I always struggle with these things.
Well, the only important things are the problem that you solve, make it bloody. Your solution, don't tell how, just what you do. Don't get too deep. And then your market, and really, really let people know, because the more narrow that is, like if I knew somebody who was in a relationship with a DJ, I would secretly contact you to contact them. So if people are listening now and they're like, what is going on? We're talking about DJs and unicorns. You are listening to the 313 show, and we are here live on 88.9 FM in Irvine, servicing here locally in California, but we are international and we'll share this online. Where in the world are you coming from? I don't even think we figured out exactly.
Belgium. Yeah. So awesome. I live in Ghent, specifically in Belgium. Yeah.
Awesome. So we've got your three sentences. We've got your one sentence, six different ways. Now the magic. Now my favorite part is, how do we bring this to just three words?
God. Okay.
Okay. I'm with you here. I know this is like.
Already stressing out. Like.
So I'm gonna break it down in that it's not three words. It's actually just two things in relationship to each other. Okay. So don't focus on three words. Focus on thing one and thing two and how they actually connect. Speaking of music, a lot of times is poetry, right?
Yeah.
And if somebody wants to convey their love for someone in a song, they're not necessarily going to say, I really love you because you are nice and pretty and you do nice things for me, and at the same time we like the same type of food. You're not gonna say that, right?
No.
Okay. You're like, no. But you might say, you are the—
did you write it down?
No, I'm grabbing a CD, watch this.
Okay,
so in the rap, you are my CD case to my CD girl.
Okay.
Like, you are the CD case of my CD, right? Or you are the phone holder. You are my screensaver of— you're the screensaver of my life.
Dear, that's such a bad pickup line. Okay, I get it. Yeah.
I was looking more for like a song and a rap song or something like that. But the idea here is that when you use metaphor and analogy, which happens all the time in songs and poetry, you really give people a chance to make the connections for themselves.
Right.
You're not literally telling people exactly what's happening. You're using, in rap, it gets crazy. It's like, there's all kinds of stuff. It's like, you know, they're using things that people know about in relation to other things that people know about. And you have to stitch together what the difference is, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's what our goal is to do with bringing it to the three words. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and then we'll see if we can come up with a better pickup line for you. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So if you were a superhero, what superhero would you be?
Wonder Woman.
Okay. If you were a mythical creature, what would you be?
Oh, damn.
Come on, look at the name.
Unicorn. Unicorn for sure.
Okay. If you were a fictional character in a movie, like that really represents, like you see yourself in them, what would that be?
Mm, I think, what was her name again? And Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction?
Okay.
Mrs. Wallace? No, I don't remember. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
What was her name?
I think it was, oh, damn, I don't remember.
Okay, so we'll just say Uma for the sake of the example here. Okay, now if your business and what you do, if your business was a cartoon character, what would it be?
I think Pinky from Pinky and the Brain.
Okay. If your business was a hotel, what kind of hotel would it be? Or would it be a hostel?
The Hoxton in London. I love the Hoxton. Yeah.
Okay. And if your business was a car, what kind of car would it be? Think about the type of performance, the type of value, the type of
Definitely a Mustang.
A Mustang.
Yes. Okay.
Or a spaceship, right? Or a mothership?
That could be too. Yeah. Mustang, okay. Spaceship.
Okay, so now we're going to transition. That was really describing you and your business and like the type of character that you are and the type of, you know, values that might be held within your company. So mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the industry. If you were to sum up the industry in which you work, what is a one word that can define that industry?
Hedonism.
And let's say, what about, what is your best talent? What is your best skill? Like, what are you best at?
Making people tell me their problems.
Okay. And what's so fun is, I encourage you to watch this back, but when I ask you these questions, what's happening is that your face turns to the side a little bit and then your lips purse and then you just like, I can see your brain working, right? Uh-huh. And what we're going to do is we're going to get other people's brains to work in the same respect.
Right.
So like what I'm seeing with you happening, that's the base that we're going to get people to feel. Okay. So let's say if back to your industry, the type of consulting that you do, how would you do that in say,
how would you do that?
Like what type of consulting would you do? Is it more of a coaching or is it more of a guiding or is it more of a, see, there goes the lips again.
Yeah. I feel like, although I'm trained as a coach, I feel like it's more of a guiding.
Okay, so let's just try it. Let's try a couple of these out and see. And let me know if any of these resonate with you.
Okay.
Let's say that you are the Mustang of heathenism. Okay, let's say you are the Uma Thurman of getting people to tell you their problems.
No, that's not.
Okay. You are a unicorn of guidance.
Yeah, that feels right. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you're the Wonder Woman of mixing records. Now that makes you seem like a DJ. But do you see what we're doing here? We're trying to like tap into what people already know, brand halos that you can already tap into.
Right.
Have you ever described yourself as like searching for words and thinking, I'm kind of like this of this. Have you described yourself like that before?
Yeah. I used the term GPS.
Okay.
As in you have to decide where to go. And yep. I'm just helping you to get, you know, to get you to that point. And I might.
So maybe you're the, whatever. So how can we use the GPS then? Like, how do you actually use it now? You're saying that I am the GPS or my service is the GPS?
I am the GPS.
Okay. So think of yourself as the GPS for electronic musicians or the GPS for your music career or the GPS of balance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Now imagine if you met somebody and they're like, what do you do? And you're like, well, think of me as I'm kind of like the GPS of balance in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or the GPS of your music career. Something. Yeah. They're going to be like, huh? They're going to purse their lips, their head's going to go to the side, and their brain's going to go, zzz, and all of a sudden, they'll get an idea. They'll get the essence of it. It's not about, it's not a tagline. It's not saying, I am the coach of, you know, anxious musicians.
Yeah.
It is literally saying, I'm kind of like a, maybe I'm a beacon, or maybe I'm a, What are those little things that people go find, like catches? You know, they get the GPS units and they go to find them.
Oh,
Okay, you could also use compass, right? Like, I'm a compass for your balance.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm a compass for your stress or something like that. But, you know, it takes a while to tease them out. But the idea is that if you know the problem that you solve, your solution in your market, you can say it in three sentences. If you can define it, you can break it down to one sentence. And if you can do both of that, you can start to dig into the essence of how you want to represent yourself out there in terms of other things, essentially.
Yeah, right. Totally makes sense.
So you might be the Wonder Woman of electronic bass or something. Who knows, yeah. Right? Okay, well, so has this been fun?
Yes, so much fun. Yes. Okay.
So now the magic question is, now with what you have, granted that you're going to have to dig into a little bit more, but with what you have, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you now with your ability with these new tools to explain what you do in the real world?
Oh, I would definitely say 10 now.
Okay.
Really? Yeah.
Well, this is just after an hour of sort of teasing out for the first time.
Yeah.
So as you're able to play these messaging off with other people and talk to your boyfriend about it and your clients and say, hey, do you think I'm really the GPS of this? And they'll be like, no, you're more like a honing device, or you're more like a Geiger counter, or you're more like, you just get people thinking about it and it gets to the essence of who you are.